the last job application from a young black man who applied for a stock boy position, and it just broke me. I'm like, we're a very female forward company, we are a very LGBTQ plus forward company, and I'm the only black guy, and except for the except for a delivery driver. And just it broke me because this grown man, his worth ended in a position that ended in boy.
Welcome back to the Swirl Suite, everybody. On this very special episode of the podcast, we talk to TJ and Hedley Douglas. They are the co-owners of The Urban Grape and The Progressive Wine Company. Being a podcast producer, sometimes you don't know how a conversation's going to go, especially if you haven't met that guest in real life. This interview to me was so magical that I edited the podcast and listened back two other times. I hope you enjoy it just as much. Don't forget to like, subscribe to the podcast, and leave a comment. Oh, and don't forget to share. Cheers. Tanisha and Leslie, how are you guys?
I'm good. I'm recovering from a busy weekend, but I am really good.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear all about that, actually. How did
the
brunch
tell us
go?
Why was it busy? What's going on?
Yeah, what have you been doing?
Our second annual Brunch Babes celebration, and it's the Women History Brunch we do in Baltimore. I partner with a colleague of mine who went through the Goldman Sachs program with me. And this year we were celebrating six Black female winemakers in Maryland, which is like historic. Because this just happened in the past 4 years. Like, we've never had that many Black winemakers in Maryland. And first of all, for them to be female. So we had shopping, of course, because that's what we do. And then we had a panel discussion and Philosophy Wines represented, Noir Sunshine, the newest one, Fly Girl Wines, and Boyd Crew was there, who now in Target. Mm-hmm. And Narciso was supposed to be there, but they had a death in their family. So we were able to pour their wines. And it was just a discussion about like mentorship and what made you persevere, because we all know wine is not easy. And the importance of being the first, and why, do you describe yourself as being the first? And it was just full of a lot of energy in the room. You could just feel the energy in the room. We had about 80 people there.
Wow.
And then afterwards, we had brunch. Because
nice.
That's what, and mimosas flowed and shopping continued. So it was what, as Oprah says, it was a happiness headache afterwards. And my Crocs never let me down afterwards. So it was great.
How did they taste the wine? Did each winemaker pour their own wine?
They did. So when we had the shopping, we also had the wine tasting there.
Oh, okay.
And they were able to pour their wines.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that went well.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do it like a yearly thing, not like quarterly, whatever. So you're going to do this once a year?
Once a year.
Okay.
Once a year.
Yeah. Nice. Good for
that's,
you, Leslie.
That's a really interesting question, Tanisha, because this is something that I would join. If you had this like a little more often, like almost like, what do you call them? Sort of like your professional groups, where you like bounce ideas off of each other and it becomes like this big collaborative. And you just,
I mean, that would be great. Or if you want to put me in the grave early, that's also a possibility too.
Ma'am, she didn't say every week,
right.
But like more than once a year, like maybe biannually.
Right.
And then quarterly, and then you can stop at that.
Okay.
Oh
okay.
My gosh. So I don't really have a good story to share, but I have to tell y'all about my experience flying Frontier for the first time.
Is this a bad story?
It's a terrible story.
Oh,
first
no.
of all, nobody talks about Frontier as bad as they talk about Spirit. So I didn't know.
But now I know, and never, never again.
Oh, because I think they already gave up on Frontier, so it's nothing left to talk about because they're not doing it.
Oh my God, it was so bad. Okay, first of all, of course, you know, the tickets were like crazy cheap. I was only going to Atlanta. Wasn't going very far. Tickets were crazy cheap. But when it was time for me to check in, I got like this list of things to pay for. And I was like, wait a minute, I have to pay for a carry-on? So you have to pay not only for the check baggage, but for the carry-ons and your personal item. Like if you have a book bag or something, you pay for that. So I was like, this is great. And
the fees are. So you get no personal item, or does it have to be like purse size?
So the personal item has to be a laptop bag or smaller. So first of all, that
but you had to pay for that. You had to pay for whatever personal item you have. So what do you have to pay for your purse?
No, you not for a purse, but if you had a book bag, you know, most people carry a book bag.
Yeah.
Your carry-ons are your roller bag and your book bag. You would have to pay for both bags and their individual fees for both bags. So anyway, that was one. I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. I'm never doing this again. So, but I pay for carry-ons. And so we board or whatever. And I noticed as we were walking up, I was like, oh my God, are we not sitting together? It was me and Alan. Are we not sitting together? Even though I bought two tickets together, I didn't get to pick seats or anything. And I just realized it as we were getting on a plane, like, oh, this is insane. So anyway, you don't pick your seats. I was sitting next to two people who also had spouses on the plane. People had to swap seats if you had a kid and wanted to sit next to your child.
No.
But it gets worse. So this was a very early flight. It's like 6 something. So I'm dozing off and I wake up to an announcement. Guys, sorry to bother you, but we have a weight issue on the plane and everyone who has a carry-on roller bag, we're going to need you to check your bag. So of course, nobody gets up because of course you're not going to volunteer yourself first. So I'm sitting there. They need 20 bags. They need people, 20 bags from the overhead. 20. So eventually, after the third announcement, they were like, guys, we cannot move until we fix this weight issue. So eventually, me and Alan gave up our bag or whatever. He's in the back. He's like 5 rows behind me. So gave up our bag. So I was like, okay, whatever.
Right, that's
never
two.
Doing this again. Never happening again.
Did 18 more people get up?
It got so bad. The flight attendant, because of course the attitudes came because it's like, whose bag is this? She's just flipping the overheads. Who?
No.
It was so bad. And then the weight still wasn't right. So they made another announcement. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so sorry. We're going to need to swap some seats. The weight is still not, it's not equal on the plane. They were moving larger folks to the top of the plane and lighter folks to the back. After an hour.
Can you imagine? Can you be like, I'm not trying to say you look like you're over 250, but...
Right, but it was, like there was no way that this is okay.
And it was height too. It was height. They were like,
understand why they were getting up.
Listen, the flight attendants. After a while, they were like, "Who is tall?" It was a mess. It was a mess. Anyway, we finally took off after an hour, and the flight attendants was like, "We're sorry about this. If you want to talk to, you know, the person at the gate, you know, feel free." And also our bags were supposed to be at the plane because they weren't tagged. They didn't have time to actually tag them or anything. They just wrote our last names on like a small tag. There was no barcode or anything. So if the bag was lost, you'd be short. Anyway, they were supposed to be outside the plane when we got off. And Atlanta was like, we're not doing that. Y'all need to go to baggage claim. So anyway, it was a mess, but we made it there safely. And luckily we flew back with another airline, but oh my gosh.
That's crazy.
How much was this flight? $20?
It might've been like $50 at the beginning, but once you added all the fees, I probably should have paid for another airline because this was way too much.
Yeah, the low-cost airlines out of here do that, like EasyJet and Wizz Air. You think you're getting a deal because your flight is like, oh, you can fly to Rome for $35. Okay, but then once you pay for picking your seat, your bag, if you want to check in early, all of that other stuff, it's like, well, what am I doing?
Yeah, and then also a thing is they send you an email. They require you to be checked in at the airport an hour before the flight. If you're not, this one guy, he lost his ticket because he wasn't there an hour before the flight.
Oh my goodness.
It's crazy. But nobody warned me. I didn't know.
Wow, that's horrible.
Well, thank you.
You didn't ask.
Yeah,
y'all know. You didn't ask.
Well, you're right. You're right. I didn't ask. I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
Oh, and tears.
Thank you for that PSA. Thank you.
Put that PSA right on out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Amplify this message. Okay.
It's just, I have even from other people and witnessing.
I'm about to say, because I know you wasn't on nobody's frontier.
Absolutely correct, Tanisha.
Because all the whole plane is gin pop. Glennis is not doing it. Okay.
I'm not doing that, nor Spirit or Greyhound or Trailways, because that's where they're on the same level. So no.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I'm trying to understand what the difference is when they say it's overweight. So you take those bags and you put them under in the cabin, in the luggage area, but the plane is still carrying the same damn weight.
I think the distribion of it on the plane, where it
works. That's what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Distribution is totally different. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to say, you got, no, I'm not going to say that. Okay. Hi, everybody. Sorry, I get off late on Tuesday because I work downtown.
Okay. Well, you look beautiful. I love your glasses.
You do. You look absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Thank you. Got another event. Hi, TJ. Hi, Hadley. How you doing?
Yes. Yes. Welcome to the Swirl Suite. Oh, y'all can mute on me now.
Awesome.
All right. So I realized that Frontier is like Two Buck Chuck. Spirit is like Yellowtail.
Okay. Okay. I will take that.
It gets you to where you want to go, but you're not happy taking that trip.
Yeah.
I think your chances of a Frontier airline sponsorship for the podcast just went way down.
That's fine. And that's fine with me. I'll take that L.
I would put
You thought you were slick. You thought you were beating the system, right?
Oh, man.
I don't even think I would put two book Chuck on Frontier. That because every once in a while you can get a decent two butt chuck. I think I put that in the line with vanilla pudding. And I'm
Listen, Gabrielle Union will never sponsor us, and it's fine. We talk too much about vanilla pudding. We can't let it go.
Well, I think she even realized it because I don't even think they make that mess no more.
No, I don't, or think, I don't think she does. Yeah. Oh man. TJ and Hadley, welcome to the Swirl Suite. Please introduce yourselves to everybody.
So I flew here on Delta, where my carry-ons were free. I don't bring luggage when I travel down to DC every week. And I slept on the plane. And because I'm over 250 and I'm really tall, I'm really lucky that I didn't get moved to the back of the plane. So, because the plane would have been flying like this the entire time. So my name is TJ Douglas. I'm the co-founder and CEO of the Drink Progressively Group, which is the parent company of a few other businesses that we'll get into today. One being the Urban Grape, another one being Progressive Wine Company. Hadley?
And I'm Hadley Douglas. I am TJ's partner in crime, wife, president of the Drink Progressively Group. And in general, the way we split up what we do is I sell the businesses and TJ sells what's in them. So I'm more marketing, events, communications, and TJ is our in-house leader, amazing salesperson, leads the buying team, and thankfully deals with all the accountants, and I don't have to deal with them because that's my least favorite part of running any business.
I read that one of you asked, what is your five-year plan? And is that really how the idea came about?
It truly is. We were in Italy. I never remember the town we were in. What town was it?
I think we're in Umbria.
We're in Umbria.
So we must have been in Todi.
Near Todi. And we were on a trip with my whole extended family, and we had a toddler. I think he was maybe two at the time, and he never got off of the sleep schedule. Like, he never adjusted to the time. So he had this amazing late afternoon nap every day while we were there. So TJ and I were sitting outside, crushing a bottle of wine. I was pregnant at the time and did not know. The second kid is fine, but we were regularly crushing bottles of wine on this trip. You know, just sitting in the sun on the back deck and so relaxed in the way that you can only get on vacation and letting your brain kind of wander a little bit. And I said to him, "What's your 5-year plan?" Just thinking we were going to talk about, do we move to a bigger house? Do we, you know, like life things. And he launched into this pre-written business plan pitch that he clearly was just waiting for the right moment to tell me about. And it involved opening a retail store and really digging into the wine industry in a different way. And when we got back, we started writing the business plan for real and looking at retail spaces.
Yeah, and this was after my time in restaurants, where I grew up in restaurants, always front of house. And at this time, I think I was probably 2 years into distribution. I turned into a salesperson selling to stores and restaurants. And I wasn't happy with that. I was good. I was really good at it, but I didn't have this honest enthusiasm about it, right? I wanted to be, table side. I wanted to get my gratification was the enthusiastic reaction to the person actually drinking the wine, right? And I couldn't get that if I was just a salesman. So yeah, so I had that brewing, and I was just waiting for her to ask the question. Yeah. And then we ended up opening up our first store called the Urban Grape in 2010 in a suburb of Boston. This was 2 years in the making, actually. So this was probably around 2007, 2008 that we were in Italy doing it. Yeah, long time ago.
And Hadley, your background has been in marketing, or were you in restaurants also?
No, I did, you know, the college years in the restaurant scene to make money, like all of us practically did. But I was not really in the restaurant industry at all after that. I was always had a much more corporate job. My background was actually working with professional athletes to help them with their marketing and philanthropic work. So like how they market themselves through their philanthropy. And then started doing that for different businesses, and always very entrepreneurial, always really kind of hustling on the business side, you know, picking up clients where I could, and just doing the things that excited me. And I actually was home on maternity leave with that second child that we didn't know about in Italy when TJ was really getting into opening the Urban Grape. And he was like, "Can you just, you know, write the all the text for the website and do the press releases and meet with the bloggers?" Like, we were like, there's this new kind of media called blogging. Like, that's how long ago this was, you know?
Yeah, we take pictures and put it on that Facebook thing.
Like, yeah, exactly. This was before Instagram, before all of it. So, you know, it was really fun. And then I just never looked back. It provided the flexibility. It's been so much hard work over, you know, the decade plus, but it provided so much flexibility for me as a mom that it always made sense for me to stay in the business.
So tell us a little bit about Drink Progressively, because there is a book and there's a scale and there's a definition. Tell us all about it.
Yeah. Going back to when I was running a restaurant, I had a very seasonal staff. They were there for, you know, 3 months over the summertime. They were young. This is, if anyone's ever been to Boston, this is Newbury Street. They call it the Fifth Avenue of Boston. It's not, but it's kind of like, you know, it has that. And it was like fingernails on a chalkboard when I heard a guest, who's the most important person, right, ask how this wine was, and the server, you know, trying to make a good experience for that guest, say, "Oh, the wine's really good." They've never had it. They don't know anything about it. They probably can't even pronounce it. And because they had a very limited time with us, and they didn't drink alcohol or drink wine, at least, instead of me trying to let them memorize, you know, our 200 bottle wine list, I ended up setting up a progressive wine list where the wines were set up categorically by body, light bodied, medium bodied to full bodied. And it was all based off of a book that I read a few years before called Windows on the World from a guy named Kevin Zraley. And he described, he taught people how to think about wine more with tactile sensations as opposed to just memorizing a vineyard, right? Or, you know, memorizing a grape varietal or an appellation or a region. And so it was really successful because I ended up teaching the wait staff there categorically how to understand the wine list so that when someone, when a guest asked about a wine and to pair with food, the server would no longer say, oh, it's really good, right? They would say, you know what? I haven't had that miss, but the way our wine list is designed is that these wines go with these foods because that's all we want, right? We just want the because, we want some honesty, some transparency. And instantly the wine sales tripled instantly. I'm talking like within probably a couple of weeks, just it tripled. And they stayed that way for many, many years. And what I realized is that most food menus are written from light body to full body, top to bottom, right? So at the top of your menu, you have your oysters, your ceviche, your chilled salads with high acid, vinaigrette, tomato, other citrus on there. And then they go down to your proteins and get heavier. And I realized that this was it just made sense to me as opposed to starting off with the wine Bible and trying to memorize as opposed to try to learn. And so I ended up doing that. And then when I ended up leaving the restaurant industry, when Hadley and I had our first son, who's still on this weird sleep schedule and he's 17, I ended up going to work for a distributor and I ended up making all of my proposals to restaurants in this progressive way because I wasn't like, hey, buy my Pinot Grigio instead of this person's Pinot Grigio, right? I was like, hey, I want to sell you this wine because this is going to go great with your food because, and I was very successful at that. And as I mentioned earlier, when I wasn't happy or being fulfilled with my current role and on that side of the industry, I took that vertical progressive wine list and I turned it horizontally and added the numbers one to 10. And so a one on our progressive scale is going to be light on your palate, like skim milk, very light, watery, refreshing with very high acid, like lemonade. A five is going to be a little bit more medium bodied, like whole milk, more mouth coating, a little bit richer. And then a 10 is going to be like heavy cream with the acidity levels of hot chocolate. We actually just did a comparison of coffee and a hot chocolate is actually a 10 on the progressive scale where it's more cozy and yummy, lower acidity and lower tannin. It's all there. It's just covered by this blanket of manipulation where in wine is fruit, right? And so it's been really successful. And in order to teach people how to drink progressively, that couldn't actually physically come into our store in the Boston area, how do we teach them how to drink progressively and understand their own palates? Let's write a book, right? And on the legal side, it also protects our idea of organizing wine by its body as opposed to geographical region or grape varietal. And so like our book, I'll finish with this. Our book came out in 2017. Like we've been doing this for a minute. It's 100% of Hadley's writing and it's 100% of my information. Mm-hmm. So Hadley's really good about taking like what I say. Like my whole answer to you just now would have been a third the time or the duration if Hadley just answered it for me, you know?
TJ loves to chat.
So speaking of wine, I am drinking your Pinot Noir.
Yes.
I was hoping that's enough, what you were sipping on.
Yes. Kind enough to send us. And I, at first I used my Corvin and tasted. I was like, oh girl, just open this bottle. This is, you're going to drink this today. It's excellent. Can you tell me a little bit about the Pinot Noir?
Yeah. Can I see the bottle?
Oh yeah. Sure.
You have it there? Cool. All right. So PWC, and I'll let Hadley tell the story, but I'll talk specifically about this wine. What you have there is the 2022 Progressive Wine Company Pinot Noir. Now, when Hadley and I started this brand, It was very important to me to not buy shiners. So for all the listeners, shiners are wines that wineries make that they don't have labels on it and their name is not on the cork and it's just extra wine, right? And so a lot of people get into the wine game by just, you know, making Chateau TJ by buying someone else's wine and putting their label on it. That wasn't for me and for the brand that I wanted to help create. And I also didn't want to buy juice. I didn't want to just buy juice and blend something and put it into a bottle. I wanted to make sure that we had control of the fruit. I wanted to make sure we had control of the palate, the aromatics, everything from start to finish. So we've actually been working directly with growers and our winemaker, who also consults with us on the vineyard side, is also turning into a mentor. And I always make the joke, like, he's a mentor, like I pay him, but he's actually teaching me how to do stuff. So this is a single vineyard Pinot Noir from a small winery called Ektimo Vineyards in Sebastopol, Ektimo. Ektimo Vineyards, and it's also a custom crush winery in the same facility where the wine is made. So this is in Sebastopol. So I'm sure you've had Mary Edwards wines before in Russian River Valley. This is right up the road. So Sebastopol is a sub-appellation of Russian River Valley in Sonoma, California. And I wanted to make kind of like a chocolate strawberry vanilla brand, right? Something that people can just get into. Understand if you want to geek out about it, you can. But if you just want to have a great glass of wine or a great bottle of wine, you can without thinking about it, right? And so 100% Pinot Noir, spends about 8 months in oak. 2022 is the vintage. We really want to focus on acidity. It's very, very bright. I'm not much of a day two wine, right? I either finish it or throw it out or we cook with it. This wine tastes really good day two and day three. Really good. And Hads, do you want to tell a little bit about the story of Progressive Wine Company?
I just really love how TJ's like, oh, you know, I didn't want to just buy the shiners or the juice. Well, TJ didn't even want to be a winemaker, period. He didn't even want a wine brand. This for our entire journey through the wine industry.
I don't need to get my hands dirty like that.
Yeah, up until 2021, TJ was like, the one thing I will never, ever, ever do is have a wine brand.
Uh-oh, we all say that on this
show. We all, 100%. Yes.
Always.
100% say that. Yes. We mean it, though. We.
Well, and I think TJ just, you know, he'd seen so many people that had failed at it, that had just gotten like the ego too big, thinking, well, I have a good palate. I can be a winemaker. And, you know, you just don't understand the economics. You don't understand all the nuances, distribution, everything. It's hard. So we were really
lucky. And when you're making wine, it's not about you.
Yeah. We were out just meeting this awesome winemaker, Aaron, at Ross Road Custom Crush, just as someone to help mentor our urban grape wine studies interns for a couple of weeks that were coming out to California for a couple of weeks. And we were just kind of trying to organize all of that. And he said to us, you know, you really should make a wine and I'd love to help you do it. And we could grow it and the proceeds could help to grow this program. And, you know, you could do a dollar from every bottle and I could be your boots on the ground here and I can help you get it going. And TJ's like, yeah, man, thanks. That sounds awesome. But the one thing I've said I'm never going to do is start a wine brand. Well, we drove from Sonoma back to Napa over the Petrified Wood Forest Road or whatever it's called. And by the time it's like an hour drive, maybe by the time we'd gotten back over to Napa, we had the name, we had the brand, we had the reason, we had the story, we had how we were going to start it, we had the initial case production. Like we did the whole business plan in the car, in the Wrangler with the top off and the sun blowing and the sun shining, right? So, I mean, the wind blowing and the sun shining. So I think it just all clicked. We had stumbled onto the right person and he just made it so easy for us to get going. And this is just the start. You know, I think we have a Chardonnay and a Cabernet coming out with this vintage also. They're just sitting in oak for, you know, longer, so they're not released yet. But then we'll have the light bodied and the full bodied so people can really start to learn about their palate. We'd love to put a mid palate in there, maybe do one-offs with different winemakers, you know, special releases. So It's been a really, really fun project, and it's growing so fast. We have, I think, 2,500 cases of production across the.
Yeah. Our first 21 vintage was 190 cases over three different labels combined. This year we're 2,500 cases over five labels. And we started it when we won the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award.
U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, we won that too. But U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and we got $25,000, which started it. And then we won a grant from the Celtics and Vistaprint for another 25, which also helped fund that. So, and it's great. And the wine's really good. Wine's really good. And in D.C., we just, and in Boston, we just released, like, it actually arrived today, the Sauvignon Blanc and the Rosé, the 23, and they're so good. So
is it, can someone just go to your store and purchase it, or is it part of a club? How does that work?
No, they're, the wines are available at both stores, in Boston, mm-hmm. and our newly opened store in Washington, DC in the Shaw neighborhood, 1301 9th Street Northwest. And they're available there, and then they're available for shipping also, I think we have coverage at 44 states right now.
Illinois is not one.
You actually have Illinois, but it is just still very tough to get. Illinois has some real issues with alcohol.
but we'll get there. Yeah. So we can ship it around the country. The Rosé is $25. The Sauv Blanc is $34, and the Pinot, I think, is $38. But this year we'll be able to put 30,000 into the wine studies program for our students.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Please tell us about your wine studies program.
Yeah. It really started in 2018. I just got the last job application from a young Black man who applied for a stock boy position. And it just broke me. I'm like, you know, we're a very female forward company. We are a very LGBTQ plus forward company. And I'm the only Black guy, you know, and except for a delivery driver. And just, it broke me because this grown man, his worth ended in a position that ended in boy. You know, and I said, well, you know, we need to, this can't happen again, right? Like all the people that are white apply for sales positions or management positions, whether they have experience or not. And all the people of color apply for, you know, labor positions, right? And I needed to change that. But when we were wanting to do that, and this is not a flex at all, but you know, we're one of the top retailers in the country, right? And all the accolades, and it's unfair to our customers if we just hire people, and it's not equity and it's not equality if we just hire people because of, right? And it's unfair to our customers if we can't keep that urban grape level of service and quality. And if we just hire someone that has no wine education whatsoever, that does our brand and our customer a disservice. So how do we do that? Well, we needed to create education, we needed to create practical work experience, and we needed to create mentorship and coaching, because unless you have all three of those, they don't work individually, right? And so years ago, and I actually found my certificate when we were cleaning the office that it has it sitting in right now. In 2005, I took a class at BU. So I didn't go through WSET, didn't know WSET existed. Quartermaster Sommeliers was too expensive, both in actual dollars, but also in time. You know, I was a bouncer and a server and a bartender, right? I couldn't afford all that stuff. And I needed to kind of train myself by going to free tastings and memorizing and learning and just tasting all the time. And I took this class, which was a very practical work experience, right? Like, people that were in my class were like, I'm going to take this class so I can make more tips. And so I took this class and I said, you know, to Hads, I'm like, well, if we're like, we should start something, but let's start with education so that we can actually create a pool of hireable people of color, so that we can actually truly be a more diverse company, right? And so it took us about 2 years, it took us 2 years to get this. And after the murder of George Floyd, where everyone realized, we're like, hey, we want to support Black people. And hey, you're a Black business owner. You know, our consumers really supported us the best way you can support a business is with your dollar. And so we ended up having a great June of 2020 financially, and that gave us the opportunity to start the endowment process at Boston University. And that was where we started the Urban Grape Wine Studies Award for students of color, which now puts two people that have to be 21 plus that identify as a person of color and have some kind of interest in alcohol. And then they apply to BU and to us. And if they get in, they go through it's about a year program, but it's three levels of wine certification, and that coincides with 4 3-month paid internships on all four sides of the wine industry: retail, wholesale, front of house, restaurant, learning beverage programs, and then going out to work with Jackson Family Wines out in California for 3 months. And they come out, I mean, they're getting, $75,000 to $110,000 careers because they have a network, they have practical training, and they have mentorship, right? And so they come out and they get these jobs, and like we're really changing the industry, one vintage at a time with PwC, with our wine studies program. And we are currently have applications out for cohort number 5. So we've yeah, and it's just awesome. And these and the people that are coming through, they're changing the wine industry because they're taking a very untraditional way to come into the world that we love. And they're not just coming in to be a sommelier to sell wines tableside. They're coming in, they're working in real estate divisions, they're working in marketing, they're working in wine production, they're working in sales, right? Because wine really does touch everything. So with that, I'll stop my answer. But we're really excited about this. And because it's in an endowment, like it lasts forever, right? In Boston. And what we want to do, we want to take what we've successfully done truly in our own backyard as a pilot and do it in other cities, next city being DC.
Wow, that's so impressive. Speaking of DC, what made you choose DC versus all the other major cities?
Yeah, I think a few things. One, just DC is so exciting to us. I said to TJ the other day, we've both lived in Boston for decades and on decades at this point. And when you go to DC, you can't unsee what you see in DC in terms of the energy, the natural diversity, the way the city comes together and just enjoys itself together. And that's not, we had to work so hard. I mean, truly, it took a decade to create a diverse and a space in Boston where everyone felt welcome, where everyone felt like they could walk through the door. And that is in some ways just the legacy that Boston is just constantly fighting against. It's not that we're not a diverse city, it's just we don't spend much time together. And we did it. We did it in Boston. We're so proud of it. When you walk into our store, it is just a very welcoming and diverse space for everyone. And day one in DC, when we opened, we had that same thing.
Day
It
one.
was like we worked so hard in Boston to change the narrative. In DC, it was just like, oh, it's been here all along. We were just in a very different city. So I think that that's, that is just that energy has just been really buoying to us after just feeling like we've just been fighting against this tide for so long. To go into DC and have it be so natural has been really, really life affirming, like just and business affirming too. It's been really wonderful. But
And
also,
Hads, I just want to add to that. It's like when we talk about, and this is like, when we've all either been in DEI trainings or have talked about DEI, diversity is not just black and white. Diversity is, it's everything. And so when
everything.
we say a diverse space, like we mean a diverse space. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the business side of it all, shipping and e-com, DC is federal, and Massachusetts still has some very antiquated shipping laws, liquor laws in general. I mean, we're famous for it up here. We can't even have happy hour. And so moving to the next city over, to expand our footprint in Boston, we just felt like it wasn't for us. It wasn't how we wanted to expand our business. We want a national presence. And in many ways, we have a national presence, but we couldn't get the wine that people wanted to buy from us to them. So expanding to DC, and we were very lucky, we got the last liquor license. There are 250 in the district, and we got number 250. I mean, things come up, obviously, but you know, for the timing, it worked really well. It really, it will help us to expand our footprint. And so, and also because we can self-distribute in DC, we can bring wines in. We can really create, our hope is to create a pathway for BIPOC produced wines, LGBTQ plus produced wines, women produced wines that can't find distribution in other states. And we see this all the time, amazing brands, and we bring them to our distributor. Like Biab Gin, we cannot get distributed in Massachusetts, which just blows my mind. And, you know, brands like that, that we believe in, we can bring them in ourselves, and then we can ship them out ourselves. So it really was not only about growing our own business, but growing all of the other smaller businesses on the production side that just have so much trouble with getting distribution and growing.
Mm-hmm. In Massachusetts, and you know, this was one of the things that I hated, but it was also one of the things that connected me with great, amazing people like you, is that we all ended up on these lists in 2020, right? Best black this, best, and then at the end, I'm like, can I just be like the best thing that happens to be black? Why does it have to be black for me? Right. And then obviously I leaned into it, and most of us leaned into it. But what it did, it allowed us to let me know that other people like me existed, which I didn't know existed before. I truly thought I was the only one, because I look in Boston and I'm like, I'm the only one, you know? But like in Massachusetts, because I heard about all these folks on these lists, that I ended up being able to launch brands in Massachusetts, but it was asking favors of distributors because it's a three-tiered system. But we launched Uncle Nearest, we launched Theopolis, we launched Kita, we launched Lafette, right? We launched McBride. You know, we did that because I wanted to sell them and let our customers experience these stories and these quality wines. DC, I don't have to ask for any favors. We can just do it.
I think one of the craziest stories from that time was we reached out to Miriam Jean-Baptiste because I was so intrigued by Alice Cream Liqueur, and she was having a terrible time getting distribution. So we were like, send us a couple bottles and we'll kind of shop them around to our friends in distribution. And one of them said to us, you know, this is a great product, like so tasty, great packaging. But there just really aren't a lot of Haitians around your store in Boston. So who's going to buy it? And I was like, well, one, there are so, like, if we're just going to play that game, there are so many Haitian people in Boston, and I can't believe that you don't know that. And two, I'm not Irish and I drink Irish cream liqueur. So I'm kind of thinking that people might drink a Haitian cream liqueur. I mean, it was just, these were the conversations that we were having with people that were mind blowing, like over and over and over again, you know?
So, yeah. So DC will allow us to use our platform to help build others.
Well, you did your job for the marketing, because not only did I get an email from your team, but people who are not even in the wine industry was like, oh, are you going to the launch party? Are you going to the launch party? I'm like, how do you know about it? So we were very happy to have you. We were so excited.
And thank you so much for all the support in DC. Thank you to DC for all the support in DC. I mean, yeah, it's just endless. It's been incredible. When we opened in Boston, we had like a friends and family, you know, the night before we opened, invitations handpicked went out. You know, we knew so many people. So we just had this fun party with all the people we knew. We didn't know anyone in DC. So I was like, listen.
We absolutely did.
Let's just open it up. We'll put 100 tickets out there free, but just for RSVP. And my team kept coming back to me and being like, it's sold out. Okay, put them to 250. It's sold out. Okay, put it to 400. It's sold out. Okay, put it to 500. I mean, it was insane. Like, just from the second we opened the doors people were flowing through it and welcoming us and so excited we were there. And honestly, when I think about the two opening parties, a room full of people that I knew and a room full of people that I had never met before, they were the same amount of love and support and congratulations. It was an incredible feeling. Truly it was.
And, you know, like Donna Burston from LaFette came and poured. Janelle and Matthew Boyd came from Boyd Crew came to pour. Or Uncle Nurse that. Came to pour. Like, it was just like, and Marianne from LS Cream and Ingrid Best from iBest, who we've launched, you know, came. Like, it was just so much love. And so we have some of these same people come through, or you know, same quality of people come through for our free tastings, our community tastings on Thursdays at our 5 to 8. And then because DC is DC, we started an after brunch tasting where we'll incorporate a local business that may be a local food business, a local jeweler, a local artist, but really give them a physical space for free to come in, you know, help build their business. And so that's 2 to 5, the after brunch at Urban Grape. And we're really excited about that. But people come through.
DC as a small town with the big city ego.
Yeah.
And the one thing about the wine world and the beverage world in DC is that we are a tight-knit community, which you don't find in other places. Like, we look out for one another. When I've gone to other cities, there, you know, it's a little more competitive. But I think because there's so few of us here, we recognize community. And so many people, like Sarita said, who weren't in the wine industry or what have you, were tagging me when you had your opening, like, have you heard of this place? We're so excited that they're here. So, yeah, I think it just will continue to blossom.
I hope so.
Thank you. One thing that is like my personal jihad, and I would appreciate if you could just take it up for me so I could focus on other things, is distribution. Like, if you could just form a small distribution company for BIPOC brands, that would be great. And I'm happy to donate $20 to the cause.
I mean, it is a dream, believe me. There are so many ways that we want to grow, and why we formed the Drink Progressively group as a parent company was to be able to really dig into different aspects of the wine industry. And that's definitely, you know, on our vision board of how to do that. TJ already has a name picked out. TJ, don't say it because we haven't tried it yet.
Won't say it. I already have the website though. already have a GoDaddy name.
And, you know, but also looking to hopefully be able to maybe someday start to acquire some smaller Black owned wine brands and be able to help them grow. And because we know on-premise, we know off-premise, we know distribution, we know building brands. So we have so much to give. And I think that there are so many people with great ideas, but that are just struggling because they don't have the network. So there are lots of plans like that in the future. But I think there was so much hope in 2020 about, like, oh, there are going to be this explosion of Black-owned beverage brands, and it's going to be so exciting to watch. And it hasn't materialized. And it hasn't materialized because I'm not saying there are no new ones. Of course there are, but there haven't been any that have grown to the size of McBride or LaFette or Uncle Nearest, right? Like, everyone really looks at those three as like the ones that made it. Well, we should have quadruple of that number, or 10 times that number, 100 times that number. But I think that there are big issues here. One, there's not funding to grow. And then because there's no distribution, who's going to fund growth if the distribution pathways aren't there? So we see the problem very firsthand. We're really trying to do what we can with it in DC and get that all rolling, and then see where that can lead to in the future, because something's got to change. There are a lot of people with great ideas and great small brands, but they can't grow. So it's my personal jihad too. And TJ's.
Thank you for that, guys. Thank you so much.
Nope. Were you going to ask, do we also sell 100 point Napa cabs and $1,000 bottles of Burgundy? Yes. And those are all in our under lock and key temperature and humidity controlled walk-in wine cellar. So you know, we want to make sure that the Urban Gray, you know, really is for everyone, and to let everyone know that everyone's a wine drinker, you know.
I love it.
Oh, I do have one question.
Yeah.
Do you still have the vault?
The vault? What's that?
What's the vault?
So your building used to be a bank.
So it used to be that. No, yes. So Leslie, and I'm so happy that you asked that, because when we were like, this is a bank, we looked at it and I'm like, oh, we can build like a whiskey room and it's a block and we do all this stuff. And we walked in and we're like, this is the shittiest vault I've ever seen.
The vault, get out of here. The vault was like a source of a fight. Thank you for bringing it up. Maybe that's why I had blocked it out in my mind. TJ wanted to keep the vault and turn it into a wine cellar. And I was like, this is, it's in the middle of the store. Like,
yeah, it didn't work.
Not turn. We did end up putting this really beautiful wine cellar in there, but I was like, the vault has to go. And then once he got in there and saw that it was like a death trap, he agreed.
Yeah.
But we did keep two things from the bank. So that bank was started in like 1960, I think. And actually on the back wall in our storage room, there's this really beautiful, I can't remember exactly what it says, but it basically is their manifesto that they will loan to anyone. Like it's like that bank's manifesto. And we were like, oh, so in line with what we do. So we kept that up there.
And so something then, along the lines of like the credit worthiness of a customer is not only not based on the, you know, this, it's the person and the community. And we're like, yeah, this hits.
It was, so that's still on the wall. And then the other thing where they found when they were doing the demo, these like the two old white guys in their brown suits and their like polyester ties, their headshots.
Like, is that Burt Reynolds? It looked like Burt Reynolds.
The bank manager's one looked like Burt Reynolds, totally. And the other was like old and pale and gray haired. And we kept those too. So we do have two things from the bank, but not the vault. Thank God.
That's really cool. That's a cool story too. All right. So couple questions. And you are answering for each other.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. What is each other's favorite wine region?
I'll answer Hadley's. I would say Burgundy, but specifically the white Burgundy region. It's not white Burgundy. I would say Burgundy, or I would say Champagne.
Yeah, Burgundy and Champagne for sure. For TJ, I would also say Burgundy, but he's more on the red Burgundy side, although he loves white Burgundy, but he's always going to pop a red Burgundy, and God help him. The man can't quit Napa. I don't know how, can we expand a little bit from Napa? His heart and soul belongs to Napa. Every night of the week, it is a Napa cab getting pulled out of the cellar.
So good.
That's very Glynis. Very, very Glynis. Who wakes up earlier?
If the dog is about to throw up, Hadley. If it is a weekend, it's Hadley. And if it's a weekday, it's Hadley.
Got it. Absolutely. 100% me.
Okay.
But I only get angry every once in a while and like slam into the bedroom every once in a while to be like, oh, I didn't realize you were still asleep. I'm so sorry.
What are each other's go-to cocktail?
Go ahead, Ads.
Well, TJ has a few, but I would say right now it's probably the Vesper.
Hmm.
Would you agree with that, TJ?
Yeah, I love a Vesper, and I really enjoy and starting to learn a lot more about Armagnac.
No, and then I never would have guessed that.
Yeah. And then for Hads, she's a very citrus forward palate. So something like a Bee's Knees, she would love. But actually, it's a DC thing with old school bartenders where when they would finish their shift, they'd go to like Old Ebbett. And get a grandma and a beer. So grandma's Grand Marnier. And so I was talking to someone, and they're like, oh, you got to try Grand Marnier. It was actually at Uncle Nearest down in Tennessee. And they're like, oh, you got to try, you know, an Uncle Nearest old fashioned, but with a little bit of grandma in it. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. And I'm like, well, it does because it's an orange liqueur. So it made sense. And so now I make this old fashioned for Hads, which is vermouth heavy on it, with a splash of grandma and some extra bitters. And I'd say that that is definitely her winter cocktail.
Yeah, that is for sure my winter cocktail, but I have him make me a baby. Like it's just almost like a half a cocktail, just to get me going. Cause I want to leave room for wine and I can't drink like I used to. So I had to cut my cocktail back a little bit. So I'll say, can I have a baby grandmama? That's what I call it.
That's so cute. Okay. Who is your spouse's doppelganger? Who do they look like?
Oh my God. Can I just tell you that many years ago when I had a blog on the Urban Grape website, I did a series of, is it TJ or is it fill in the blank celebrity? The man can look like everyone. Over his lifetime, he's looked like David Justice. He has looked like he and The Rock had a real phase where they looked very similar to each other. Every time I turn around, he's looking like somebody different. So I think that TJ looks like a lot of people.
I do. And I was going, we did a massive house clean or office clean the other day. And I found some pictures of us when we were just getting together. Like Hads and I have been together for 23 years now. We're celebrating 20 years of marriage this fall. And I found this picture of us and I'm like, oh my God, it was such like a Charlize Theron.
Okay.
I didn't tell you how. So I'm like, oh my God, like what's up? So
yeah. That's very nice. She's super hot. So I'm going to take that.
And South African. And you know how we love
South Africa. Yeah, I just love South Africa. So I'm going to take all that. Thank you.
You guys are adorable. This is so cute. Okay. Last one. What wine will your spouse most likely skip?
Okay. TJ will skip. This is so controversial. I'm almost scared to say it out loud. TJ does not like Riesling. He is a wine industry person that thinks Riesling is overrated and kind of ridiculous. Oh. And he hates how every Psalm lays out the Riesling like it's God's gift. He really is not a fan.
Like, look how big my Riesling list is. I'm like, look at all the stuff you can't sell, right? Like, anyways. But if you want to know how I really feel.
I just got you fired from the wine industry. That was our dirty little secret,
you know what?
For a long time. But I just let it out to the world.
There was actually, you know, this conversation on Twitter There was a conversation on Twitter a few weeks back about Riesling. There's one wine writer in Florida. And she was like, I don't know why people keep talking about Riesling and why they say it's so amazing. I don't like it. And don't at me. And people just, oh, well, you haven't tried this and you haven't tried that. And she said, I've tried enough. I know my palate. I don't like it. Leave me alone. So you are not alone, TJ.
Tastes like gasoline and beach balls. I mean, we can do better.
That's what I say. Has that beach ball taste and smell, that pleather. For Hads, I would say, I mean, she already gave you a little bit about how she feels about Napa Cabernet. But opposites do attract.
I like Napa Cab, TJ. I just don't like it every night of my life. That's that. I like it. I drank very nice one with you the other night. It's just not every day.
It was delicious. What Hadley definitely hates, which actually would get her kicked out of the wine industry, she hates like old Barolo.
Yeah. An old Bordeaux. I hate old wine. Sorry. I just don't. Sorry.
All right.
Doesn't do it for me.
Give Hads a young, fresh pet gnat. She's going to be so happy.
Like them young and fresh. What can I say?
All right. You want me to leave this? You guys can just hang.
I don't know where this was going. That is so interesting.
I just
I have a question. It's like, what don't you like about, like, so it's vintage wines. You don't like older wines.
I a wine without any fruit to me, I don't understand why drinking it. And then I also feel like they get so barnyardy, like old Bordeaux. Yeah. I'm like, I am living in a stall with a horse and I don't like it. Like, it's just, it, nothing about the experience appeals to me. You know, I'm also not invested in how cool it makes me look to like old wine, to pretend enough that I like the old wine. Like, I get it. It's a thing. It's just not my thing. And I'm very confident and secure in myself enough to stand in a room of people that are geeking about some old wine and be like, that tastes gross. I don't like it. So, I just don't need it. We're so canceled after this, TJ. We're getting kicked out.
It's like wearing a Chanel suit in the wrong size.
Yeah,
just because it's Chanel, like, it still doesn't make it right. Right.
I mean, like, do I really like this nubby tweed? I don't think I do. I don't think it's me, but I'm supposed to wear it. Totally. Like, 100%.
But just, that's the thing with the wine industry, though, is that too many people are told that they have to follow the rules. And if they don't follow the rules, they're wrong. And where Hadley and I have always come from, it's like, this is wine. You are always correct with your own thoughts.
Yes.
100% of the time. Yeah. 100% of the time. You're right. Right. And so if we can all just come from a place of like, you know what? I don't like this. Great. You need to understand why you don't like it, mm-hmm. right? And that's where the education comes in from professionals, right? Understand why you don't like it and understand what you like and how to find more of that. But yeah, all of these like rules of what you should and should not like, and just because someone gave it 100 points, it should taste good. And just because someone gave it 75 points, that it should taste bad. No.
Well, that was fun. Guys, thank you so much for joining the Swell Suite. Before you go, tell everybody where they can follow you.
Absolutely. So theurbangrape.com. And I think starting tomorrow, it will geotag to your city. I'm very excited about that. So if you're in the Northeast, you'll geotag to the Boston store. And if you are around the DC area, and honestly, nationally, because of national shipping, you will geotag over to the DC store. So that is very exciting. And then on Instagram and TikTok, we're just at Urban Grape. Twitter makes me angry, whatever it's called now. So I don't go on there very much for our Twitter account, but you could follow us there, but it's old. And, I think we're still on Facebook, but does anyone really even go on Facebook anymore? I don't know. All the stuff from Instagram auto populates.
Our parents are on Facebook.
Yeah. At Urban Grape everywhere is where you can find us. And, in Boston, we're at 303 Columbus Avenue in the South End, and in DC, we're at 1301 9th Street Northwest in Shaw.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this. I was so excited for this. Yeah. I've been wanting to, I'm a little angry that I wasn't on there like 2 years ago. Like, I really wanted to be on the show, but I listened to you all and I'm so happy that we are on here, and I can't wait to welcome you into the DC location. So
yeah, absolutely.
Ladies,
thank you guys.
Very, so, very so fun. Much fun. Thank you so much. Yeah, really appreciate
of course.
It.
And she has to fly in so that she can try the Progressive Wine Company.
I'll fly in.
Use Delta or United.
Please.
Yeah. No, or Southwest. Southwest still works.
Or Southwest.
Yes. Thank you. You guys are amazing.
So yes, you guys
keep
are wonderful.
Keep on doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks to all of you for having us on there. And you keep up doing what you're doing too. You guys are all an inspiration.
Seriously, you guys are fantastic.
We touched on this topic before we started recording, but we are definitely praying for Baltimore and all the lives that were affected by the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. It's definitely been a tough week for Maryland, and we just wanted to let you know that we're thinking about you. Cheers. You've been listening to the Swirl Sweet Podcast, a part of the Alive Podcast Network. This episode has been edited and produced by Vine Me Up Media.